The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. Or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
With one of the best savings rates in America, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Even easier than choosing Slash to be in your band.
Next up for lead guitar. You're in.
Cool.
Yep, even easier than that. And with no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, is it even a decision? That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.
Hey guys, welcome to Happy, Sad, Confused. This week, Aaron Taylor Johnson on acting, dealing with the press, and an attention-getting performance in Nocturnal Animals. I'm Josh Horowitz, the host of this silly, absurd little show. And with me, as always, setting up the shenanigans to come, is Sammy. Hi, Sammy.
It's not silly, Josh.
It's stupid.
No.
It doesn't matter.
This is important.
This is
important.
We're changing the world?
Yes.
I hope some people get some joy out of this show. It certainly brings me joy.
Yeah, it brings my parents a lot of joy.
That's all we're doing it for, the Hellers.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Hellers.
Oh, they love that.
A lot going on right now. We're in the home stretch of 2016. Of course, a lot of good movies out there. I want to mention, and we'll probably talk about it till the award season, La La Land opened in limited, or is opening in limited release this week. I think it goes wide in a week or two. See it. Love it. It's amazing. The hype is real. Emma Stone, of course, was on the show. Check that out in the back catalog. And we've also got another, I'll say it, we've got Damien Chazelle, the director, is coming up in future weeks. Recorded that recently. So definitely a film worth talking about, as is Moonlight and Manchester by the Sea. They're all out there now. So enjoy some good movies, guys. This is the time of the year to really see the good ones. We were busy over here. We just had a fun little afternoon. We can tease this because it happened, right, Sammy? I feel like we can.
If you say we can, then we can.
Okay, so we our next After Hours bit, our sketch comedy shenanigans, stars none other than Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt.
Oh my God!
Oh.
It's like the biggest movie stars in the world.
Yeah.
And they're so wonderful.
They were wonderful.
They were more wonderful than you want them
to be.
They're
great.
I was waiting to hear like a secret, nasty, weird thing.
That was just me.
Yeah.
You know, all my
secret,
nasty.
Yeah. Everyone else was so lovely.
That will be coming out. I believe it's going to be coming out next Wednesday, next week, the week of release of Passengers, which is the film they star in. Check out the sketch when it hits. Hopefully it will break the internet because it's pretty funny. And it's very holiday themed.
They go for it.
And not much else to say except I'll mention we should talk about Aaron Taylor Johnson for a second before we dive into that interview. Aaron Taylor Johnson is a fine young actor who I first met and got to know, and maybe most of the world did, thanks to his performance in Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass.
Of course. Not to mention he also was in a great film called Nowhere Boy at the time that was directed by Sam Taylor Johnson, now Sam Taylor Johnson, his wife, and a great director in her own right. Most recently did 50 Shades of Grey, so she's got quite the career going too. And Aaron's just a good guy. He's got a good head on his shoulders, and this is I think this is his podcast debut. I think he says his first podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's a very thoughtful guy in that he is very honest about his early dealings with the press and not knowing how to deal with it and it rubbing him the wrong way. And I always like those kind of conversations with actors that are very forthright about, you know, breaking that wall and talking about sort of how the sausage is made from a press standpoint, because that always fascinates me given my job. And he's also very just eloquent about the priorities in his life. He's a dad, he's a husband, and he's, you know, he's taking great roles when he gets them, one a year, and he alternates with Sam, and they've clearly got a great relationship going. And he's doing also just fine work. This new movie, Nocturnal Animals, is directed by Tom Ford, who made his film directing debut with A Single Man a few years back, which was a great film.
I love that movie.
Wasn't that great?
I love that movie.
Colin Firth got an Oscar nomination for that. And this one is a really mesmerizing kind of thriller in the style. It's almost like a fusion of like Hitchcock and David Lynch. It's a little weird, a little out there, really puts you on the edge of the seat, and it has a great cast. Amy Adams, Jake Gyllenhaal, our man, Mr. Michael Shannon.
Oh, your boy.
My boy. And Aaron, I have to say, has such a great role in this, and it's unlike anything you've ever seen him do before. He is basically just the nastiest guy. And there's a sequence in the film where Jake's character is basically has this with Isla Fisher as his wife, is on the road and encounters some just nasty guys led by Aaron Taylor Johnson, and it's a really super compelling sequence, one of the best sequences of the year. And I'm so happy for Aaron because it's definitely unlike anything I've seen him in, and I think it's going to open new doors for him. So good for Aaron. He's a good guy. And I was thrilled to have him on the podcast. And that's about it.
I'm excited for the movie. I'm excited for this podcast.
This is so much excitement to go around.
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. Please enjoy this conversation with a good guy, a good actor, the star of Nocturnal Animals, now out in theaters, Mr. Aaron Taylor Johnson. Mr. Aaron Taylor Johnson, it's good to see you, buddy.
You too, Josh, man. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. As you know, I'm a fan of this one. We were both working our respective duties last night at the New York premiere of Nocturnal Animals.
Yes, sir. Yes, we was.
Did you have a good time? Is that enjoyable? Is that work? Do you consider a premiere?
Absolutely. Do you know what's nice is being in New York? We have a lot of friends here, my wife and I, so it was a real nice chance to see them, and so there's a little bit of work and pleasure, you know, so it was okay. Yeah, it was great. I gotta say, you know, we've done a few of these screenings now, and we've been doing Q&A's, and I'm definitely getting a little bit more accustomed to it, or feel a lot more at ease, you know, turning up to these things. But you get into a rhythm of it, you know. I almost have to think of it as another role in a way, you know.
Yeah, you have to be on in a different kind of way.
Yeah, absolutely. I do find it hard to be myself, I guess, you know. Or it's very vulnerable. You know, you feel very vulnerable when you're the amount of sort of attention and social media you're doing. So it can be pretty scary.
It's a weird balance, because it's like you obviously are proud of the film, you're proud of the
absolutely.
Work, and yet you, like, I think there's something that certain people have, and I certainly have it, and I think you do. It's like it feels a little bit weird talking about yourself to that degree.
Oh, absolutely.
And being at the center of the universe of that kind of thing. It's not natural.
It really isn't natural. I mean, and, you know, some people do enjoy it, sadly. There's sort of a narcissism there, but or an ego. I'm definitely, you know, I don't, not an arrogant person, and I don't really, you know, I find it if it's, yeah, you have to sort of find a fine balance, I think, you know, to do this thing. But luckily I've got you know, a fantastic wife, and I've got kids, and I'm a parent, so, you know, I have real grounding and a real natural base and love there to come back to. So
plus it's
keeps my feet on the ground, you know.
I would think.
I'm
would
very
think.
Grateful and lucky and blessed to have that.
And I always love to see you and Sam. You always walk the carpet together. It's always good to see you guys together in that kind of realm.
Yeah, yeah. I should always be by my side, absolutely.
So it was also fun just to see, probably for you to see your co-stars at an event like this. Not to mention, I was at the party. Did you get a chance to see and talk to Bruce Springsteen?
I got introduced to Bruce Springsteen last night, and
I kept my distance.
I opened my mouth, someone sort of tapped me on the shoulder and was like, "Hey, I just want to tell you, I just saw the film," and I was like, "Okay." Okay, and I gave that person time, went, "Thank you, I appreciate that," and then tried to turn back, and he was like, and you know the other thing about, and just kept engaging me in conversation, I was like, no, I've blown it. But luckily, just before that, I was able to introduce my wife. I was like, I kept on looking over my shoulder, and she was just, those two were flying. They were like,
nice.
Well in conversation. I was like, oh man, I'm at work, I guess.
Exactly.
So,
well, maybe she laid the groundwork for a future friendship with Bruce. We could all use some Bruce Springsteen time.
Yeah, man, the guy's a legend and very charming. He actually really loved the movie was about to go down the complimentary route. So and then I got taken away. I was like, wait, come on, dude. Francis is about to just tell me how much he loved this movie and what I did as a character. No, so I don't know.
Again, keeping your feet on the ground.
You need humility. Yeah, humility. Yeah.
So tell me about are you the kind of person that goes up to people that you admire if you see them, or do you kind of is that something that's counter to your spirit? I mean, like, if there's somebody like an actor you grew up admiring, you see them at a party, do you feel at this stage that you feel comfortable going up to them as a leader in the business? You obviously have a place to come from, but
I think sometimes you have that burst of adrenaline and confidence. You can tell which ones you can approach and not.
Yes.
There are definitely actors you go,
there's body language, there's,
I really want to, I can't go over. And then there are some people you can kind of just sort of go, hey, I just really love this and I'm nice to meet you, and then see what you get back. I don't know, it can always it could be dangerous, that game. So
have you ended up befriending or even working with just people that you grew up admiring? Have you had a couple moments like that where, like, oh my god, like, I'm now sharing?
I think with this movie, man, not that I really share any movie scenes with Amy Adams. I mean, she is someone I would love to be able to actually work with, actually in a room together, because she's phenomenal. But just doing this movie, I knew Jake Gyllenhaal was attached to play this role, and the majority of my scenes were with Michael Shannon and Jake Gyllenhaal, and I just couldn't be any more blessed and grateful to be in those scenes with those guys, because they only elevate your performance. You only can observe and watch and gain more and add it to your your skill set, I guess. So,
yeah, I as I was telling you earlier, it was my second opportunity to see the film, and it's a film that does. I mean, it's captivating and truly mesmerizing the first time you see it, and I think it gets all the more rich the more times you probably see it too.
I agree,
don't you
man.
Think?
I've seen it four times now, and you just keep finding little moments and little nuances, and the more I've spent doing Q&As with Michael Shannon, Amy, and Tom Ford, and hearing Tom Ford's, when people really push him, and he's trying to analyze, and try and get his sensibility across, and it's like being a student of film and watching him do something that is there's so many more layers to it than what you see in the first
absolutely
film. So I. No, it's hard to articulate, but he's done a phenomenal job, and there's a lot of Hitchcock referencing and Kubrick, and I feel like the David Lynch kind of score to it.
Totally.
A beautiful score, and there's great tension and suspense, and how he's linked these three stories into one, and with those transitions, it's just so fluid and beautiful, and there's a trail of these little things that pop up in Susan's present world, in her contemporary, stark, sterile, materialistic world, and in the West Texas setting of this novel, and the past where she's with her younger self and Jake Gyllenhaal, and it's this is beautiful through lines, and it's just remarkable what Tom Ford's achieved.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are citing those as references. Certainly when, the first time I saw it, it was Hitchcock and David Lynch were the two things I thought of. And I love a film that kind of like doesn't give you all the answers, that kind of leaves some open-ended questions and is open to interpretation.
Absolutely. Yeah. Ambiguity at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't get enough of that in mainstream movie making nowadays.
No, but it's honest. It's just so unforgiving. It's honest. And that's what's kind of beautiful and refreshing. And you take what you want. I mean, you know, people relate to Susan's character and had, you know, that lifestyle and, you know, had that culture that told them what they had to be and how to present themselves and that judgment. And they relate to that. And some people go, well, I was that sensitive, artistic person that was told that I couldn't do what I believed in. And I stuck to it and I triumphed. And some people were just like, I love the... I connect to the fact that when you found that person you love, your soulmate, that you take care of it, you look after it, and you never let them go, and you don't live in regret. And through layers of, you know, artistry, culture, you know, it's heavily driven. It relates to a lot of people, and it ends with you with your own interpretation, which is beautiful.
You're listening to Happy, Sad, Confused. We'll be right back after this.
Let's take a moment and think about the things you love. It could be stuff like vintage vinyl, stylish sunglasses, or your exotic fish collection. Whatever your passion is, the new Multiply the Cash Scratchers from DC Lottery gives you a chance to multiply your cash by 5, 10, 25, or even 100 times. And enjoy a lot more of the stuff that makes you, you. Multiply the Cash Scratchers from DC Lottery. If you love it, multiply it. Please play responsibly.
And your character is... It must be exciting for you. It's exciting for me as a fan of yours and just seeing your progression in your career to see something you've never done before. Certainly something I've never seen
you
do before. And it's, I mean, to describe this character without giving too much away. I mean, it's he's like pure masculinity and unbridled energy and chaos and danger and violence and unpredictability.
Absolutely.
And that's got to be invigorating to play. It's also got to be a little bit. You know, not necessarily fun to play. I don't even know.
Yeah, no, there is room to be, you know, explore and find a side to it that at least this character enjoys. I mean, you can tell the enjoyment that this character gets out of provoking Jake Gyllenhaal's character. I mean, it's intense. I mean, I studied serial killers for about 3 months straight, and I watched documentaries and on Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer. I mean, The Jinx was out. There was so much stuff to watch and try and grab hold of just any characteristics or mannerisms or, you know, like The Jinx. I really loved... the fact that the guy started, when confessing, you know, he actually couldn't control his burping and then calls himself out on it. So he was close, you know, it was funny. He was sort of out of body experiencing, experiencing himself something that was a giving, you know, his tick, you know.
And his body was reacting to, like, involuntarily to what he was.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, even so, like, I mean, this is not in the movie, but, you know, one of the scenes of me, Michael Shannon, and Jake, I was in the car and they sort of, you know, they're pushing my character and he says nothing. And I just started, like, you know, belching and uncontrollably and, or at least having sort of reflux kind of action. But, you know, and Tom said, what are you doing?
let me try this, Tom.
What are you doing? But, you know, there was no judgment. I didn't feel afraid to be able to try new things. In fact, Tom loved the fact that we did versions where I tried things. And, you know, you have those. He has those for himself to play with in the editing room. Yeah. Either works or it doesn't. But that was just a small example. I mean, but the through line on these guys, they're all charismatic.
Yes.
They all got this weird... charismatic, charming quality that, you know, and that was what was kind of unpredictable. This, you know, you just this guy's makes you feel uneasy, and the look in his eyes, he's got a lack of empathy, and I played around with that. You know, that was the fun in it.
Really. I would imagine also just being a parent, that whole sequence, that's a parent's worst nightmare.
It's a parent's worst nightmare. What Jake had to portray, I mean, that's what's so beautiful. He goes to such a vulnerable place and is mind-blowing in this movie. You know, I remember reading the script and going, oh my God, that's the role I could not. You know, that's
you don't want to go to that place. Yeah,
I know. And Jake took it on and did it. But I mean, I had a little hesitation on taking this role on because of being a parent. I mean, I've got four girls and I'm a father. I didn't really want to bring this aura around me and that kind of darkness is. It wasn't very pleasant, that's for sure.
Who was happier to end the production? Was it you, Sam, the kids?
My wife was very pleased when I was able to cut my fingernails and my hair and...
bring me back the Aaron I love.
Stop drinking and smoking and, yeah.
This podcast over the years has become like a de facto Michael Shannon love fest. He's I mean, the guy's amazing.
He's a legend. He really is.
And he's been on the podcast that he's such a crazy maniac in the best possible ways. I love that man. Talk to me about sort of just like what the environment of working with him, because I mean, you talk about charisma, like, I mean, you could watch a movie about that character. You kind of want to know more about like what's that guy's story, what the hell is up with that guy.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's so much that Michael gives, and there's this one scene in the diner, and I think Jake asks him, you know, have you got any family, like, you know you don't seem, what, you got any family, anyone to take care of or look out for? And you just see in one look. I mean, he bypasses the question, but in this whole look, this one look just gives you a whole lifetime of regrets.
Yep.
And this kind of go, oh my God, I just saw a glimpse of his soul. And that's remarkable. That's Michael Shannon. That's someone, you know, and on set, he had this... You know, he wasn't very approachable because, you know, he put people on edge. He felt like he was very tense. He seemed very kind of scary and intimidating. He's not. He's a very charming, very lovely man. But that's the difference. It's someone like who's professional and focused and just wants to stay in his headspace and keep all his energy close to his chest and save it.
Yep.
Savor it and use it for... When the camera's rolling, and not only on it, just on him, he gives it when it's the camera's on me and on Jake, and that's a professional actor who you know, it just keeps it fresh, and it just allows me to react. We haven't discussed or rehearsed or talked about it. I mean, he just stays in his mindset.
He's in it.
And it's there, and you respect that. Yeah. You just go, yeah, that's his process, and that, man, the guys, it works, man. It works for him, and it's great.
Since we have some time, can we go back a little bit?
Yeah.
I mean, as I recall, I think the first time I met you, I think it was at South By for Kick-Ass.
I think
I moderated a panel for you guys.
Chloe and Chris, maybe,
exactly,
or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, and Matthew was there, and it was just getting started.
Wow.
I mean, give me a sense of where you were at in your life. I mean,
Dude, I mean,
talk to me about what was Aaron like then versus now. I mean, you and Sam were together by then, so
we were. I mean, when we made Kick-Ass, you know, I wasn't with Sam. You know, I shot Nowhere Boy. I shot Kick-Ass first, and then I went to shoot Nowhere Boy, and that's when I met my wife, and she directed that movie. And then obviously, come around to a year later after they've edited Kick-Ass, we're promoting it, and that was new. It was like stepping into, and also, like I just said before, like the promotional side of this job is something you have to just, I don't know, you can only get better at it by doing more of it and experience. I mean,
And that was the first. You'd been acting since you were a kid, but you'd never been in that kind of a thing.
I've been acting since I was six, but yeah, no one, you know, you don't, you know, and people, you have this thing, I get, what's they called? What do the press, what do they do when you're like,
Like media training?
Media training, that's the thing, man. And I remember like, oh, we'll have to get him some media training or something. And, you know, you never know the etiquette. You know, I was swearing. I was this. I was that. I was really defensive, actually. The majority of the time, I was just like, I didn't want people to prime into my personal life. And yeah. I didn't realize that, actually, I can still control what I say, what I don't. But, yeah, no, I had a real problem with that. And I also had a real issue with attention and the idea of this movie was getting a lot of attention and success and a real buzz around Kick-Ass, and you know, I was playing a lead character, and you know, it's scary. I mean, I must have been what, 19 or something, and I think I don't crave attention and fame, you know. I've never done that. I've only ever been passionate about acting. So, you know, when that does come, I don't have a mechanism to figure, you know, to be trained for that. And yeah. It's funny, dude. One time, I'll tell you a media training thing after, because, but you know, I clearly stumbled my way through a lot of stuff and didn't do too well and all this, you know, and I've had some other movies out, you know, Savage and Anna Karenina, mm-hmm. and those are in this kind of world circuit campaign, you know, and I still messed all those up in a way that I don't even know what I'm doing, really, you know, how I'm supposed to, you know. I remember at one point, you know, Sam and I are together, and you know, people want to pry into our relationship or what is it about, you know, sure. and age range and all this, you know, and I remember I did some media training. They were like, "So we'll give you some media training for some." I can't remember what it was for, and you know, so they put me in a room with this dude who's like, whose job was to provoke me.
Oh my god!
And they had to literally stop it because I was about to knock him the fuck out. Basically, I was gonna punch this guy in the poor, you know, sweet guy who's only doing his job. And I was clearly not understanding what they were doing, and I just wanted to punch him in his face.
And just inappropriate question after an inappropriate question.
Yeah, and it was the point of like, dude, you're supposed to just, you know, like, you know, it's funny. It's kind of embarrassing. It's really embarrassing, but I think...
I don't think there's anything to be embarrassed about not being... The people that are good at that kind of thing, it's not necessarily something you need to take pride in.
No. It's a funny world. You know, I'm being open and honest to you. And I think what I found... I'll tell you what I found in the experience, if people are wondering. It's just like... You know, you can only be yourself, man. You can only be honest. And the moment I just let go of that, I went, you know what? I can answer what I want to answer. I'll let, you know... I'm just honest and try and just answer from the heart, you know.
Well, and I appreciate you coming by for something like this, where it's a little bit of more of an extended conversation, and I'm honored that you kind of like would be more open with me maybe than you, or it sounds like you're open with everybody now, but that you're able to talk about this kind of stuff at this point.
Yeah, listen, cool. You know, anyone brings up my wife, I love my wife, she's a beautiful woman, and I am blessed to have that love and security, and I've got gorgeous kids. I mean, we have a beautiful family. I love being a parent. I'm actually a really great hands-on father. You know, I only pick one job a year. Most of the time, I'm with my kids. I love cooking. I love taking them to school. I love doing activities. I've always wanted to be a father at an early age, and I am a young father. People go, "What? You're 26? Oh my god!" You know, like it's like, yeah, okay, but the things that I've achieved already in my, you know, 20 years, you know, is pretty remarkable for most, you know, people that, you know, people, someone asked me the other day, it was like, you know, what's it like being a 26-year-old? And I was like, I don't know, man. I know what it's like being me. Yeah. I know I can just be me, and that's fine. I don't really equate it to, oh, I got to be this at 20, I got to be this at 25, and this,
right.
I assume I got to be like that at 30 and what have you. So I don't really know. All I can know is that I'm just stay true to myself, stay present, do what I love doing, be instinctual, and that's the best I can get people make mistakes and they do things. I, you know, pick and choose things that don't work and they do. You know, it's just difficult in this culture, in this world, this today, where everything is documented, everything's social media, everything's this, you know, and it's hard to keep certain things protected. And my private life is something that I, you know, would, you know, love keeping private and special and in my own little bubble, because it's the only thing that just keeps me, you know, alive. And that's why I wake up, you know, for my kids, you know.
And I've seen you guys out and about just in casual settings, and that comes through, frankly. You guys always seem really sweet together. Yeah. And I think people forget that also, like you talk about the age thing, like you're 26, but you've been working for 20 years.
And you've been working in an adult world.
You've had an accelerated kind of unusual life.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that, you know, that's, by the time you were 20, you've been working for almost 15 years.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about, well, let's talk on the career side of things in the wake of Kick-Ass. So Kick-Ass, you'd already been working, obviously, for many years. You said the chronology was you had already shot Nowhere Boy before Kick-Ass? So that came
Straight after.
So, I mean, arguably, too, you could say those are probably the two most important kind of roles in your career for different reasons, I would imagine.
It was a nice contrast as well. It kind of really showed an ability there, you know.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, people probably assumed I was like an American kid.
I mean, it's that double-edged sword. I've talked to actors over the time. It's like sometimes it's good not to have choice because you don't have to worry about it. But suddenly you had choices to make as an actor, and that can be a little bit intimidating, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'll tell you where I am now. I can say that, you know, before my family, acting was a form of escapism, you know. It was me able to kind of be, I was clearly running away from something, and I think I was able to immerse myself in characters. And it was therapeutic for me, you know. It kept me focused on something creatively. So I was just like any other young, ambitious actor, job to job to job. What am I doing next? Well, I want to do this. I want to try that. And then you burn out. You always burn out, and then you start making bad choices. You start doing bad in your performances. But jump ahead, and where I am now, I feel, you know, I don't need to escape anymore. I feel grounded. I feel secure.
Right.
I know who I am. I know what I want to be. I know, and that's, you know, and it revolves around my family. It revolves around my kids, my daughters, my wife. And so with that, it takes out all the insecurity. You know, I'm just secure, you know. Yeah. And so now I can just focus on, hey, what do I actually want to, what do I want to do as an actor? What do I enjoy as just as in the craft of that? Like, what's the character that's interesting to me? Who's a filmmaker that I want to go on this journey with? And so, you know, I'm really, and then I only, once I've picked that one thing, that's it. I'll do that one thing, and then the rest of the year, you know, there's either space for Sam to pick something, or it's just, I'm back at home.
Yeah.
And it allows me, when I do that job, that I can really fully immerse myself. So I actually then, you know, say like Nocturnal Animals, I had time. I had 3 months prep. Then we shot. Maybe it was about 3 weeks of shooting. And then that was it, you know. And then I can give myself that time and preparation and go, look, I deserve to be able to give something to myself, at this point in time, so, and be present.
And you talk about filmmakers. I think it's always very telling the kind of filmmakers that are both attracted to an actor and that you're attracted to as someone in this profession. And, you know, I think of people like Sam, or I think of Joe Wright, or I think of Doug Liman, or Oliver Stone. I mean, these are, and Tom, of course.
Yeah.
All very unique, different kinds of filmmakers. Do you find that you gravitate towards a certain kind of experience? Are you enjoying still kind of, because I would imagine the Oliver Stone experience is a lot different than the whatever. I mean, you could
hugely.
Insert
name. I mean, absolutely. But you know, no matter what, I'm grabbing experience. My experience, I'm learning so much. you know, for me to do Savages and be in the hands of Oliver Stone and be surrounded by Benicio del Toro and John Travolta or Selma Hayek, you know, and see this filmmaker's process and be immersed in that is you only ever are going to benefit from it. However hard the struggle was making the movie, or however hard the challenges were, no matter what, you've ran the race from start to finish. Yeah. You made it through, and on that journey, you've gained a whole load of different skill sets, and it's just and that's the beauty of it for me, the collaboration, the art of it.
And someone like Oliver, I know, because like he's someone that doesn't shy away from, like, he likes pushing buttons, both as a filmmaker and to his actor sometimes, right. too, right? He likes the kind of question and poke and push, and it's all for a good cause, obviously. The proof's
absolutely.
In the pudding.
I love that. I love someone who's going to, like, you know, push you to the brink, and also, you know, because they're tapping the right buttons. Yeah, they're trying to get something out of you that... I'm always open and willing to go on that. You know, I love that. I love being a part of that person's, that filmmaker's process and vision. And I love the way that they all have their unique way of getting you there. Tom, on the other hand, for Nocturnal, was just so beautifully eloquent and articulate, and was able to express what he wanted without being condescending, and he gave you time, he was very patient. He was able to allow us to improvise and really be free, but created, you know, limitations and boundaries within that, and gave such microscopic notes for each little bit, and such a beautiful eye for detail and passion, and just was able to just, you know, he made you feel secure, and I put my trust in his hands, and was able to have fun with that. So,
yeah,
you know, and that worked for me too. So
I always like, and I had this sensation when I was watching Nocturnal Animals, like seeing a film where you feel like that filmmaker knows exactly the only place he wants to put a camera. Like, the shot has to be there, and it has to look like this. And certainly there was collaboration probably on the set, clearly, but like, I always get that sense with like a Lynch, a Kubrick, a Tarantino, and yes, a Tom Ford. I feel like what's like that can only be, that's their vision, and there's no wishy-washiness to that filmmaking, and that's kind of cool to see.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, this is such a personal project for him. It speaks so strongly. You know, he's got such a message that he wants to get across. He knows what he's trying to get across. And that's everything. You got a director who knows what they want.
Yeah.
And then they can make decisive choices. Like, and that was unique. Sometimes you work with a director and you're both on this journey and you go, you know, we're just gonna yeah, like, let's just explore, see how we can pull something together. It's like, it's
a little
scarier, but
a little dicier.
You know, I think, you know, which means the only thing is, like, so Tom, like, every frame, like, what you're talking about, the way he sets the camera up has the style, has
a purpose,
content,
to it, right? Yeah,
you
exactly,
know,
yeah,
You know, so with that and Seamus McGarvey, I mean, it's shot so beautifully, and then that and the score, and
the score's like out of a great Hitchcock movie. It's fantastic.
It's such old school cinematic film noir movie. It's a thriller, you know, and I think that's gonna just is a standalone film in itself. You know, I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud of what Tom's achieved. You know?
There's more Happy, Sad, Confused coming up after this break. Can I get a sense of what you were into as a kid, just from a film standpoint? Like, were you into movies? I mean, you obviously were acting from a young age.
Yeah.
But, like, what kind of movies were you into? Was it anything and everything?
I mean, I remember we just had little, you know, I just would watch the same videos over and over again. You know, the VHRs of, like... I know he had the sort of Tim Burton Batman or something like that. You know, I was just a kid who wanted to, you know, or remember, like, those sort of thing. But Movies, yeah, not really. It came from a real instinctual place of just wanting to, I guess I was just quite a social kid, so, you know, very active as well. I mean, I like to think my mum and dad actually just would find all these activities for me just to wear me out, so I'd go to bed, you know, early and be exhausted, but it never worked because I would always just want to be a part of, you know, what everybody was doing. You know, I was that kid that would never go down bed and keep coming downstairs till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, you know. And, I did a lot of activities, man. I did swimming, I did gymnastics, did martial arts, I did dance.
Did the fact that you've gotten in this, by some standards, a young career, in other ways not a young career, already have donned, you know, tights twice for two different superhero roles, is that something that checked off a box for you? Did that click with something for you as a kid? Did it have like a special meaning for you, or
no,
not really?
No, I wasn't a comic book reader or you know, I didn't follow or collect comics, so...
It's the times we're living in too, I guess. Like if you had grown, you know, if you come of age 30 years ago, you wouldn't be playing those roles, but that's like where the art is made now.
Exactly. I mean, that's, you really got to think, you know, what's happened in, you know, the generation I'm in as an actor is, you know, it's, you've got that kind of genre movie. You've got, we're in the world of, big franchises, merchandise sort of, you know, machines like Marvel or Star Wars or what have you, or the new Hunger Games, or, you know, there's, you know, and Jennifer Lawrence, I mean, just talking to Hunger Games, that's someone who can really be able to jump around different genres, you know, to be in Hunger Games, but then to have David O. Russell, to work with David O. Russell, and to have this movie and that, you know, and be at a standard where it goes, listen, same with Amy Adams. I mean, geez, Amy Adams, like, Enchanted to The Fighter to, you know, like, yeah. She's just, you know, that's someone who you just admire and you go, that's beautiful, because there's no vanity involved. There's no, you know, not many actors can bounce from one place to, you know, from comedy to this genre to that to drama to an Academy film to a big blockbuster movie, you know. And but that is the world and that we're living in right now. And I think and that's fun, you know. As an actor, you know, it's all fantasy, it's all make believe, it's all dress up.
Sure.
You know, so
sometimes more literal than other times.
You know what? And you know what? Great. You know what? If you've got an opportunity to play an avatar or an alien, a freaking, you go jump into the future, you know, you've got all these options, you know, at your fingertips.
Was it a big decision at the time, or a no-brainer to do another kind of superhero thing when you went and did Pietro for Avengers? Did it feel like, oh God, I'm going backwards, or if I'm going to do it, I should do it in this context? No. Or
There was no going backwards in that. I think that's only ever, that's only ever sort of elevated my career, you know, and phenomenal family at Marvel. You know, I actually thoroughly enjoyed myself, and I loved the guys there. I'm friends with Lizzie and Chris Renner, all those guys. You know, they're great actors. All of which have their own, you know, careers outside of that world too.
Yeah.
You know, these are talented people. Mark Ruffalo, you know, Downey and Samuel Jackson. I mean, just the list goes on. So, you know, that's remarkable. We're all there having fun, and there's, you know, all the egos are down. It's just a really great space. So I actually really loved it. I'd happily be doing more if my character didn't go down. Didn't sacrifice himself for Hawkeye.
Was that always the plan from the start?
Yeah, when that had to be the secret I had to hold for 2 years almost, you know. Like when I met Joss Whedon, it was like, you know, when you get the contract, don't be surprised that you're not signed up for like, you know, 8 different films. I'm like, this is what I have in mind. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, you know, and that's interesting too. It's like, wait, so I can kind of do a character dip in, dip out, you know? And you never know. You take rolling those dice, man. But, you know, I'd rather I'm glad I said yes rather than no, just because I was going to be in one. I was like, no, because I wasn't going to be in five of them. I'm not
going to
do this
nothing.
Movie.
This
you
is
know,
how
I think. But I'll tell you, I know what you're getting at, and I think the pinnacle moment of when I felt comfortable. So when we go back to when you're talking about Kick-Ass time, and I'm like, oh god, I'm leaving. I can't do this. This is scary, and this is like, you know, I'm like, is this how life's going to be? Just like this, and. You know, life still goes on, nothing really changed. But, you know, I felt I couldn't carry the weight of being like, I couldn't even say at that point, at that age, I couldn't even say, when people were going, what do you do? Like, what's your occupation? It's like, what are you stumbling for? What are you? What do you do? I'm an actor. Just an actor. You know, it's like, I just felt like an idiot. Just felt like it didn't. The weight of that just didn't mean anything. It's like, you know, I struggle with the idea of that, and I didn't realize that, you know, that's still an honorable thing to be. It's fine, you know, just because I wasn't a doctor or a lawyer or something that, you know, had carried some serious weight, and it was, I'm just an entertainer. I'm a storyteller. I'm an artist at the end of the day, and. You know, or it's, we're all here figuring it out, man, you know? But when I didn't feel, you know, clearly confident or secure enough to say that at the time, but I think it was when Gareth Edwards really came along and Godzilla was the thing where I went, okay, let's step it up a notch, man. Let's just be, you know, you can step into those shoes now. And I've now, especially when at this point I've observed these guys, I've seen how Nicolas Cage can hold himself. Seen how...
the navigation between I've seen movie star and actor.
John Travolta.
That you can do both.
Yes. I've seen these guys now. I work with these guys. Okay, yeah. I get it now, man. I get it. You can just... It's fine. It's not... an embarrassing craft. It's not this, or I don't know what it is, but there's a point in which you kind of go, all right, I'm going to accept what comes. If it's a, you know, if it could be a bad movie and get this, I don't care. I can accept what comes. I know I got to promote this thing, and I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to step into those shoes, that role of what is asked of you. And it was with Gareth Edwards' movie. You know, when they said Godzilla, I just laughed. I was like, really? Okay, great. They're going to do another monster movie. And they're like, no. This is with legendaries, great guys, Thomas Toll, you know, Alex Garcia, and okay, who's directing? Gareth Edwards. And I just, you know,
seen monsters,
that year, yeah. Seen monsters. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, the guy that, you know, shot most of this thing on his show, basically broke his back and made this movie for like, I don't know, $500,000 or something insane with Scoot McNairy. And I was just like, damn, he's visionary. He's talented. And I went to meet him, and I just, you know, I adored him, and he's modest and humble, and he's just a beautiful man. And it was that pinnacle thing. I was like, right, all right, okay, let's create this character, let's go on this one, I'll do this, I'm ready to step into those shoes. And then Avengers, you know, fitted in right just after I made that decision. So yeah, so I was already in a mindset that was like, I feel like I can carry the weight of what this universe, you know, those studio movies, how they want you to be. And they do. They want you, and for lack of better terms, they want a movie star. They want someone to step out on the carpet and do this thing. And that's what I mean when I go back and saying, while I'm doing this press thing, I'm playing a role, man. I'm playing composed and smart in this.
Where are you at right now? I think you're living in the city while Sam directs a project here, I believe. And are you looking for stuff? Or are you, because you guys trade off a little bit, right?
Yeah. We flip one-on-one off. And, you know, and I tell you what, it's the most empowered I feel as a man in my masculinity. It's the most empowered I feel when I'm empowering a woman. And my wife, and you know, we were just in New York recently for 3 months. She was shooting a new Netflix series called Gypsy with Naomi Watts, Billy Crudup, and it was just me and our kids, and it was, you know, and I was parent at home, and being paternal and taking care of them, and it was lovely and beautiful. I love that. feeling that I get, like, to connect with my kids and that, like, that hands on. And I also love the fact that I'm raising three girls. I'm really strong women, and they've got a role model like their mum, who's a strong woman who is an artist and is doing what she loves doing. And we're all here supporting what she loves doing. And that's important to me as a parent, is encourage that that's what we do for one another, yeah, as a family, as a team, and it's beautiful. I never felt so empowered like that in my life, and I love that feeling. I think it's the most attractive. You can see a woman when they're like doing something that they're passionate about, especially when she's a director, she's a leader on set, it's hot.
Do you guys talk about collaborating?
Oh yeah, absolutely, all the time. It's like, oh man, when can we find that thing we can do together?
Yeah,
I want to do something with you, and like, man.
Would you direct? Are you interested in making films?
I'm interested in filmmaking. I couldn't quite say I could direct at this point. I know I haven't got it in me fully. I've seen what directors have to go through, and I don't think I've got the patience and ability to bring everybody together. My wife has it.
Yeah.
Tom has it. Tom Ford has it, and my wife has it.
You have to motivate a team. You have to be a leader.
Yeah,
you
have have this beautiful ability where people just like look up to them and want to do. They have these. My wife's great at being able to. Everyone who meets her is just in awe of her and loves her, and she's able to just have that ability. And I don't think I have that. So
hey, you played the movie star role. Now it's not so far to go from the guy to the guy.
Well,
on set.
I think that's another thing. Like, I mean, in a sense, when it's like Tom, like, he's playing a role.
Yeah.
He's playing a role of, I'm the director, and the way he carries himself, his confidence, his composure. I think, if anyone's like wanting to know like what's, advice and all that, it's definitely the way, your persona, isn't it? Like, there's something about, there's a small image. I don't come across as narcissistic or anything at all. I mean, it's not that. It's because that's completely the opposite. But absolutely, if I've learned anything and seen what Tom is, and I admire and inspired by how he and what he's done. Going from very successful fashion, empire like Tom Ford, and then being able to switch lanes, and he bought the book and then wrote the screenplay. He dedicated his time for that, and he came from a passion. And
everybody ready to take out the knives and just tear him down.
How
people are.
Strong.
It's just, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that's it. And by the way, that's the whole world, isn't it? And we find ourselves doing it all the time. I mean, it's just judgment on top of, judgment. And I don't know. It's a few steps forward and a few steps back.
Right.
And we're only human, man. We're living a life, and that's what we got to do. Just stay what we believe in, I think.
Well, from the start, since I met you, you've always struck me as a very genuine and kind guy, and as you say, a strikingly grounded guy. I've got over a decade on you, but I feel like you're way more grounded and got the perspective of a of someone much older than your years actually reveal. It's been good to see you, buddy. It's always
you
good.
Too, Josh.
I really appreciate your time.
No, thank you for having me on your show, dude.
Is this your first podcast? Have you podcasted before?
I don't think I've podcasted before.
You've been podcasted, Aaron. I hope it felt okay.
Yeah, thank you. You were gentle. Thanks.
Everybody should check out Nocturnal Animals. It's a hell of a piece of work from Tom Ford and this amazing ensemble. And as I said, you've never seen Aaron Taylor Johnson like this before, and he's excellent in it. Thanks again, buddy.
Thank you, David.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
1 episode of Happy, Sad, Confused was produced by Michael Catano, James T. Green, Mukta Mohan, and Kasia Mihailovich for the MTV Podcast Network, with additional engineering by Little Everywhere. You can subscribe to this and all of our other shows on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you find your favorite podcasts.
The Jeep Wrangler 4xe. It's electrified.
Boogie, woogie, woogie.
So you can boogie, woogie, woogie up a mountain,
boogie.
Over creeks, or boogie, woogie, woogie through a desert where you get bit by a pit viper. So you boogie, woogie, woogie back to camp and ask your friends if they'll suck the snake venom out. When they say no, you boogie, woogie, woogie to the nearest hospital for a dose of anti-venom. And boogie, woogie, woogie your way to a full recovery. The electrified Jeep Wrangler 4xe. Learn more at Jeep.com. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's pair.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.